Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 12:59 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 7th. I thought we'd kick off today with oil prices, which have pulled back slightly from the $70 area. This has been an area of resistance now since June. The bigger point, of course, is that we've had a substantial rally already since October, and a lot of that has been pricing in the geopolitical risk. This represents the peak that we saw back in September following the attack at the missile or drone attack on the Saudi Arabian refineries. Well, what we would probably need to see is a clear and move to curtail supply in order to support prices beyond the $70 mark. And the reality is that there's a lot of oil that could be brought to the market at higher prices. When we look at the backwardation that we have in the oil price, we can see that the front end might be around $68, but you go out about 2 years and you're probably down to $58, and that's just not an economic level for a lot of the unconventional supply. Well, the backwardation would normally suggest that there is a supply bottleneck. But if that were the case, one would anticipate that the price would be a lot higher than it is. And I think that the backwardation doesn't seem to do quite justice to the price environment that we're presented with. This is a very odd situation. This backwardation has been in place now for months. And we're not really going to have hedging take place where we get a significant supply of additional new oil coming to the market until that future price rises. Well, either this $10 two-year disparity between the front and the long end of the curve is going to be unwound by the futures market, or we're going to see prices rise meaningfully so that two-year prices are approximating current levels. Well, one way or the other, then that is going to introduce additional supply to the market. But of course, when we think about what this means in terms of the bigger picture, oil prices above $70 are going to represent a headwind for places like India and Japan. And there is the possibility that this range below $70 will be resolved on the upside. We've seen that there's been an uptick in volatility for India. It pulled back in a dynamic manner yesterday and was reasonably unchanged in here today. The rupee also weakened yesterday, but was a little bit steadier in here today. But it's at the lower side of the range that's persisted since August, and it is still ranging below its trend mean, obviously shown inversely here against the US dollar. Then Japan was in positive territory in a rather dynamic manner in here today, up 370 points, bouncing from above the 23,000 level. This has looked like a consolidation in the region of the upper side of the two-year range for most of the last few weeks. And the second section index is leading now on the upside once more. It broke up and out of its little range in here today. It's coming back up into the region of the peaks put in 2018. But the most important point is that it broke back above its trend mean in the fourth quarter of last year, and it has continued to improve upon that performance. So that is a rather, I think, impressive turn of events. Now, when we look at the Japanese yen, it has also started to weaken over the course of the last couple of days. Part of the reason why we've had the strength in the yen over the course of the last couple of weeks has been because of this uptick in geopolitical tensions. But we haven't seen the immediate aftermath show a clear deterioration in geopolitical tensions. Of course, Soleimani hasn't in fact been buried yet. There was a stampede at the funeral today, so they cancelled it indefinitely. Well, what That also tells us is that it does take time to plan reprisals. It's inevitable that Iran is going to persist, but the question is when, and will it result in a war? I think it's quite unlikely there's going to be a war, but are we going to see continued geopolitical tension and brinksmanship and saber rattling? I think that's practically inevitable. Now, when we then think about the gold price, it was in positive territory today. It has bounced from around this $1,550 area. That's the upside, or that was the peak back in August and September. So, if we see just a consolidation in this area between $1,550 and $1,600, that would be a really very benign outcome. There is a running question about what is animating this rally that we've had in gold prices over the course of the last 12 months. It would be tempting to think that it is all about negative real interest rates and about the pricing in of a potential inflationary outcome. I think that is probably not giving due justice to the size of the rally that we've seen and what's going on out there in the wider world. The reality is that the Federal Reserve is engaged in massive monetary accommodation. It has massively increased the size of its balance sheet over the course of 4 months. Then there is the fact that the federal government is running over trillion-dollar deficits, and that the Federal Reserve is in many respects enabling that kind of activity, which is a de facto adoption of modern monetary theory, regardless of what the official prognostications are. This is exactly what they're doing. There is the clear potential that will arise in an inflationary outcome eventually, but more important than that, that's I think probably a second order result. The first order result is that it puts the purchasing power of currencies in the firing line, and that is I think the most important characteristic here, that this isn't simply a situation that is evident within the USA. We have the ECB back in engaging in quantitative easing. There are a number of countries are actively lobbying for fiscal stimulus in Europe. The UK has already adopted it, so has Australia, so has Canada. The Japanese never stopped their quantitative easing program, and China is still engaged in what they're terming targeted accommodation. But the bigger picture is that they continue to cut their reserve requirements for their banks, and that kicks in a couple of $1 billion worth of stimulus every time they do that. The world is awash in additional liquidity. One of the reasons that people have been worried over the course of the last 18 months isn't so much about the trade war, but much more about the tide of liquidity, and that tide of liquidity continues to advance. When we look at the balance sheet of the or the combined balance sheets of the various central banks, I haven't put up the correct chart right now, but what we can see is that it is continuing to rebound and rapidly approaching the 20 trillion level. So that's, I think, an important characteristic. There is the clear potential that we're going to see the balance sheet totals for the major central banks exceed $20 trillion and push back up towards the peaks put in all the way back at the end of 2017 again. And that's in direct response to the accommodation that's being introduced by the various central banks. Then we also have the fact that deficits are continuing to increase as well. Now, this measure is reported at a, and I don't know why we're not getting the chart coming up for this. It always worked before. When we look at the combined deficits of the same central bank respective governments, well, we're looking at $1 trillion a quarter. And that is a rather large sum. It's also the highest levels we've seen since at least the immediate aftermath of the credit crisis. So this is a measure that doesn't tend to get updated all that often because different countries report their deficit figures on different days. But the trend since the beginning of 2018 is very clearly upwards. And that's the big message here, that we have massive deficits. We have central banks that are printing, and gold is responding. But gold is responding because the purchasing power of fiat currencies is being eroded. Well, the monetary effect, and we can come back and think about the fact that inflation is a monetary phenomenon in all cases, as being the rationale for why gold prices have broken out over the course of the last year. Now, it's very tempting for people to think, well, it must be because of geopolitical tensions, or it must be because of the bond yields or negative real yields, or the fact that the TIPS yield, it's probably, I will put that up, if we look at the TIPS yield curve, then what we're presented with is an environment where there has been, right now, in the Treasury actives, or the normal Treasury yield curve, the Fed funds rate is about 1.75%, which means that everything with a maturity of less than 8 years is trading below the Fed funds rate. But when we then think about the TIPS curve, then that is a rather interesting phenomenon, that everything is, there's a belly in the curve right now, so that the 5-year TIPS, 6-year TIPS are all trading with negative yields again. And that's a rather interesting phenomenon, that there is no pricing in of risk in the bond markets that we're going to have an inflationary outcome, despite the fact that the oil price has steadied up towards $70 and that gold is breaking on the upside. The 10-year Treasury is trading at 1.82% and the Fed funds rate at 1.75%. That represents incredibly bad value if we're not going to have acute deflation over the course of the next decade. Now, I have some sympathy with the continued view that technological innovation is deflationary by its very nature. I think it would be rather rash to conclude that globalization is going to persist indefinitely. One thing we certainly have, though, is that China's investing heavily in automation, and that should help in terms of technological deflationary forces. But the question that is always comes up in the mature stages of an economic expansion have to do with capacity constraints, wage demand growth, and commodities starting to do better. Well, what we've really just begun to see is that the continuous commodity index has broken its downtrend. Iron ore prices have been quite steady for most of the last year and are firming at the moment from the region of the peaks put in 2017 and 18. But aluminium prices have just broken an almost 2-year downtrend as well, And I think that is rather meaningful. We don't have a very clear lithium price. It's the most reliable one we have is only updated on a monthly basis. But some of the lithium miners are also breaking their downtrends. I thought it was rather interesting at the CES show in the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas that three concept cars and one that's production ready were previewed last night. What, of course, this helps to highlight is the sheer number of new startups in the electric vehicle sector. And that is a rather interesting development. It's something that you don't really see in a mature sector. But it is certainly something we're seeing in the transportation sector right now. Tesla has just started delivering its first domestically produced cars in China. And the share has been really explosive on the upside, more than doubling, considerably more than doubling in the last 12 months. So this is, I think, a rather incredible performance, particularly against a background where there was incredible bearishness being expressed when it was down below 200. Of course, it still is a C-rated credit, so we're not exactly talking about a company that's without risk here, and it is susceptible to incredible volatility. But certainly this move on the upside suggests that 400 should now represent an area of support, whereas before it had represented an area of resistance. But it also helps to highlight the transition that we're getting in the wider market, that all of the automotive companies now have to produce electric vehicles to compete, and the range of vehicles being brought to market is going to increase substantially over the course of the next 3 years. Shell has been rather vocal in its intentions to build up a network of charging stations, and they want to become one of the biggest beneficiaries of this rollout and the ensuing demand for electricity. It means that they're going to be building power stations, and of course they were one of the key beneficiaries from the growth of the internal combustion engine by being a producer, a refiner, and a seller of gasoline, and owning a very substantial network of filling stations. Then they're attempting to try and replicate that strategy with electric vehicles as well. I do think that it is likely that we're going to see an inflationary outcome. When then we look at some of the individual commodities, the coffee price has been pulling back rather sharply over the course of the last four sessions, and it has at least stabilized today in the region of 120. It needs to continue to find support around here if the breakout from the range that persisted for most of 2019 is going to be sustained. The cocoa price has been doing better in here over the course of the last couple of days. There's a cartel has been created between Ghana and the Ivory Coast to try and put a floor under prices, and there's been a sequence of higher reaction lows now for 18 months, or in fact really since the beginning of 2018, so two full years, and that remains intact. Soybeans is at the upper side of its range. It hasn't quite yet been able to break on the upside, but it does look like this is nothing more than some consolidation in the region of the upper side of this range. Now, what I thought was also interesting in here today was some of the dynamics that we've seen in the currency markets. The dollar index is still steady and is continuing to rebound from the lows put in at the beginning of this year. There's been a succession of lower rally highs since October, and there is no shortage of dollars. So there is the potential here that this is a topping formation, but we're going to have to see resistance being encountered in the region of the trend mean and that sequence of lower rally highs being sustained in order to confirm that that is the case. The Australian dollar has pulled back rather sharply over the course of the last couple of days. There is the potential that the response to the very significant fires in New South Wales and Victoria is going to have an impact on economic growth and may necessitate that the RBA cuts interest rates. Well, the weakness of the Aussie dollar has been beneficial for the ASX 200, and it was in positive territory in here today, bouncing from the region of the trend mean. I think it's also worth keeping an eye on the resources sector, and the ASX 300 resources index is on the cusp of breaking out to a new recovery high and has continued to hold this sequence of ranges one above another now for the last 4 years. When we then think about some of the other currencies we've had meaningful moves in, the Philippine peso had also had a meaningful move over the course of the last 24 hours. And following the weakening 3 days ago, it's almost completely unwound it over the last 2 days. The Singapore dollar is also, it rallied for most of the time from September, and now it is testing the region of its peak from all the way back in January of last year, and we're seeing the first evidence really of supply dominance starting to come back in. There is the I think there's a lot more dynamic moves we're seeing in the currency markets than we've seen in a while. I think there's a lot of indecision out there. Investors are starting to weigh the question about which central banks are printing, which aren't, which are more aggressive on the interest rate front than others. And there is this relative value play starting to emerge. But the bigger picture is that gold is strengthening in almost every currency. And when that occurs, it is usually representative of a clear bull market environment. The other asset class that is starting to look more attractive right now is Bitcoin. It was up $500 in here today, but more importantly than that, it has pushed back above the 8,000 level. Now, the clear consistency of the trend since June has been that it encountered resistance at $1,000 increments on successive occasions on a monthly basis, and that ended in November. Instead of encountering resistance at 9,000, it encountered resistance at 8,000. That was a change to the consistency. Is an acceleration of the trend, and it has subsequently stopped encountering resistance at successively lower levels. It's now pushing on to a new high. The question is, will it be able to sustain it? But we did have an upside Q reversal in the middle of December, and since then the price has been rising. We had an outside day then on the 3rd of January, and we've had this breakout in here today. If it can sustain a move back above the trend mean, well, then we're back in a recovery scenario. And of course, we do know that the halving is occurring probably in July, and that will halve the reward for mining cryptocurrency, well, for mining Bitcoin. And it will bring back into focus the supply and elasticity argument. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.